Hello, welcome to Values, Virtues, Ethics and Morality. My name is Magla Pillay and I have here in the studio with me today Sister Denise, who has been practicing Raja Yoga meditation with the Brahma Kumaris for over 40 years. Sister Denise, very warm welcome to today's show.
Thank you.
The format of today's show is called Socratic Dialogue, and by definition, it is a philosophical method of systematic doubt and questioning of another in order to elicit a clear expression of truth supposed to be knowable by all rational human beings. It's a definition that came to us from Socrates. The purpose of today's show is manifold. We will be taking up a variety of subjects on morals and ethical values. We will be looking at the world's conventional views on these subjects. We will be analyzing as well as dialoguing these topics in order to see where the world is at, and we will be looking at ways to uncover new foundations of our value systems. We find that most people want to do the right thing. However, most people also find themselves in the position of acting against their conscience. We will look at why this is the case. Sister Denise, very warm welcome to today's show.
Thank you.
Today we will look at the subject of the ethics of materialism. There are some who will consider that topic by itself a contradiction in terms.
Well, not really, because we are in a culture of materialism. And what materialism means is that anything that you can see, touch, reproduce, experiment about, that is real. And so the world we live in deals with physical realities. What the problem about the ethics of materialism is that it considers a human being to be an object, more than a being. And therefore, when you look at a human being as an object from the perspective of the self, which you don't think is an object, it creates double standards. The people who set up ethical principles are generally the dominant males of a particular community. So one of the problems with the ethics of materialism is that they will look at a woman as an item of property owned by a man. So in many cultures, for example, a girl is owned by her father, then he gives to her husband, so she's then owned by him, and then when she gets old, she is then owned by her son. And so then she has to follow what they say, which is usually whatever they find convenient, and it may not be having much concern for her rights and her feelings as an individual, you see. So this is one of the problems of the ethics of materialism. Another problem is where you look at property as having actually more value than a person. And so, for example, crimes against stealing in some cases will be dealt with more severely than crimes against a person, depending on the position of the person, the nature of the crime, and so on. And so you get a discrepancy between the voice of conscience, which actually is a very intuitive voice that comes from the soul, and when the ethical principle is coming from the angle of materialism, there's a clash with the voice of conscience. And because we live in a culture of materialism, so ethics means ethics of materialism, we have a number of problems, deep philosophical, moral and ethical problems due to this, and this is why we're discussing it today.
What has been the impact of what you just said on the world? What has it done to the world? How has it made it, what is its effect on both men and women?
Well, I think the main effect has been to condone different forms of cruelty, especially neglect and emotional abuse, verbal abuse. You know, the ethics of materialism will say, well, if there isn't any sort of cut or bruise, it means you didn't get hurt. And that's not really the case, because who gets hurt is the person, the spirit within, whereas the ethics of materialism just considers the physical body. Another thing that it has created is that if a person is in emotional pain, for example, the ethics of materialism will condone an attitude of scorn or, you know, diminishing the import of a person who may be suffering in that way, you see. But ethics is supposed to be a set of principles that ensures better quality of life for people. And when you have the ethics of materialism, well, it doesn't do that. It ensures better quality of life for some people, as compared with a worse quality of life for those people who are not in a dominant position. And because of that, it produces these double standards. And the other problem, or the other impact I feel that it has had, is to actually encourage attitudes of being punitive, because it points to this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong, therefore it has to be righted through causing pain to whoever is perceived to have done something wrong. One of the problems of seeing a woman as an object in certain cultures is there, it'll allow the dominant males of that culture to create laws that are very restrictive and constrictive of the woman, which may cause her a lot of difficulties and suffering because of attitudes that they have. Well, a woman is like this when she isn't, has to be like this when she doesn't, and so on. And so it's very dehumanizing and demoralizing. So that is, I think, a very big impact. And one of the very severe impacts is the genital mutilation, you see, which is an extremely severe impact, which is a whole other subject. Yeah. Another area where I think it has had a negative impact is it, because of the double standards, it tends to encourage corruption. And I mean, the idea of ethics is to avoid corruption, but because it's based in materialism, instead of avoiding it, it encourages it. And so I feel that ethics, when based in materialism, has failed humanity. And this is why it's important to look at the subject.
So Denise, if somebody finds themselves to be a victim of the circumstances that you just described, where they're being subjected to humiliation, a form of degradation, disrespect under so-called, you know, this is the way we do it and you will fall into this or else, what would you say to such a person?
Well, the conscience will alert the person to the fact that something's wrong, but they may not be able to articulate what's wrong. So I feel that programs of this nature, where we're actually putting words on it and describing, you know, how this works and why it is inequitable and why it is a problem, I think is going to help a person to actually articulate it. The next thing is that when the ethics are stacked against particular sections of society, it causes the section of society to lose self-respect, which is supposed to be like that. Because when a section of the community has no self-respect, they will not challenge the system, and so it's easy to use them. And so this is again another problem. So I think that once a person finds the words to describe the discrepancy that they're feeling, and then they start to realize that their self-respect has been taken away by that kind of approach, then they have good reason to build it up, and they find themselves in a position where, yes, you are, you know, going against the current, but at least you're coming into your own power about it. You can at least articulate it, and then you find that you're in a better position to be able to work towards changing the approach to ethics. And this is really what I think spirituality is all about, to challenge the materialistic base of ethics and to propose that ethics, morality, and values need to be based on spiritual principles in order to be valid, and that the materialistic base of ethics actually invalidates it.
Okay, so I just asked you about the victim in such circumstances. How about, say, if you're a male and you're born into a very patriarchal culture, but you know instinctively that you're compelled by your culture to behave in a certain way, but that it's also wrong. How does one, if you're locked into a culture or a mindset or a country where this is how it's done, how do you pull yourself out of it without, you will upset the apple cart? How does one deal with that? Because did you see the difficulty?
Yes. The very important thing that helps more than anything is when you can put it into words which are not emotionally charged, so that you can say, or you can represent something as being right, even though it doesn't correspond with the prevailing prejudices very often. But if you are emotional about it, or angry about it, or there's any charge to it, you'll immediately put yourself on the opposite side of the table from everybody else. But if you're able to articulate it and in a sense, appeal to the other people around you, appeal to their higher nature, their conscience, and so on, they will not exactly notice in the same way that what you are proposing actually goes against the grain of the heavily biased materialistic ethics, you see, and that way you will begin to effect change because you're being rational and cool about it.
Yes. Nothing that you said is remotely easy. Where does one find the strength within oneself to challenge such deeply held prevailing attitudes?
I think that a person who is motivated by pure conscience sets that motivation as a life goal, that I will navigate my life by this star. And as you continue, as you grow, as you move through life, you start to develop qualities, you get the patience, you get the resilience, you get the sort of inner force to actually carry that forward, because you have a very deep sense of the rightness of it. And that has power, and that power accumulates. Because whenever there is a discussion or an argument about the validity of your position, you're very capable of representing that argument, and probably better than those who would fault you, because you're adding to that quality of being a humanitarian.
Okay. Sister Denise, we live in a world where material gain and success is everything. It is how a human being is defined. And the cost to the human factor is so great. If people insist on seeing what they can gain from it rather than what is being sacrificed for it, how would you convey your message to them? Because we continue doing what we're doing because we're getting so much out of it. The external looks wonderful. But there's a price to pay. And we're humanity so willing to pay that price. I have two questions for you. Why are we so willing to pay the price? And how do we get people to say that we can achieve, but not at the cost of the human element?
I think there's two things we can do. One is to identify the fact that it is all very short-term gain. And as we start to describe and articulate the laws of spirituality, the laws of karma, you make people a bit more aware of something that deep down within themselves they know, but as long as nobody's talking about, they can conveniently forget. But once you start to mention it, it's more difficult to forget. And the second thing is, there are many, many examples of people who gained a lot, but lost a lot. How many people have had health problems because of working to a point where they just lose everything from heart attack? How many people have lots of money but no love? No good relationships, you see. So, because what people really want is happiness. And it's been told to people that, well, if you just get more money, more things, more status, then you'll be happy. But there's just too many examples saying that, you know what, that's not true. And you start to point to these examples and have people actually describe their disillusionment with materialism, this starts to create an impact, you know. So that it is very difficult to push that idea that happiness means money. And I think in this day and age where we are now, this illusion has been cracked time and time again too much, and it doesn't hold up in the way that it did 10 years ago, for example.
Hmm. Okay. So, do you think that on a global scale there'll be a shift? And if so, what will cause that shift? Because what you're saying sounds really wonderful, but is it realistic to think that people will actually buy what you just said, even though it's necessary, even though it's kinder, more humane? Will people buy what you just said?
I think that, you know, there's literature out. There's a book I'm thinking of, maybe most people haven't come across it, but it's called The Confessions of an Economic Hitman, which describes the profession of undermining countries through these materialistic ethics. And it crosses the line from ethics very easily into criminal behavior, but which is legal because of the way the laws have been set, or because of the activity going from one country to another country, so there are no laws covering those activities. So they know very well that it is that it ought to be illegal because of the enormous amount of damage it creates, and because there are so many laws that it violates, it's just that they can get away with it. And so as these things start to get described, the people who continue to engage in that are a minority that knows that they are, you know, running the danger of it catching up with them. Plus, the majority of people who really are motivated by doing the right thing, they're much more educated, they're much more alert, and they're much less easy to have the wool pulled over their eyes. So this, I think, is creating a shift. It's a slow process because it's a matter of education versus propaganda. But I think, though, that it is getting through, and people are, I think the technology, the internet and so on, allows people to really find out stuff which otherwise they could have been prevented from knowing, but now it's easy. So this is good.
Do you think the ethics of materialism will be soon replaced with a different type of set of ethics?
I don't know about soon, but definitely it is beginning. And, you know, first of all, something is out of the box, then it becomes something strange, then slowly it comes into the mainstream. There's a rule that was mentioned by the philosopher Schopenhauer, who said that, you know, if you bring in something new, the first reaction is that you will be ridiculed. And then if you can survive that, it moves to a second phase where you get very severely opposed, extremely severely, maybe violently opposed. And then if you can get through that, the third phase is absolute acceptance. And everybody says, oh, well, we all knew that. And I find this quite an interesting rule that was identified by Schopenhauer that gives you the staying power to stick with the new and pass through the ridicule stage, the opposition stage, until you get to the, okay, everybody knows that this is the way we should go. However long it takes, so be it.
Okay, thank you, Sister Denise. It's been wonderful listening to you. I hope viewers at home have derived as much benefit from this discussion as I have, and we are hoping that you take today's conversation home to your friends and family and see if these ideas that are shared with Sister Denise sits well with you, and how you can use what we shared today to improve the quality of your life. Thank you for joining us, and good day.